Okay, so let's move on to outfield, big position. We have a few guys to talk about that we have a discrepancy in our rankings. We basically have Carlos Beltran and Hunter Pence flipped. You have Beltran at number 22. I have him at number 35, while I have Pence at 25, and you have him at 36. Let's start with Beltran. He was terrible in the second half. He struggled a lot against righties while hitting 228 overall, I believe, in the second half. There's not a whole lot to like in the rest of his second half numbers. He's 36. I think this could be the year where he cliff dives and falls off a cliff. What do you think?
I think he probably wore out in the second half, and I think that Mike Matheny's addressed that. He doesn't intend on playing him as much as he did last year. And if the season had ended in the regular season, I might be more concerned about the struggles in the second half. But Beltran got hot in the postseason again, and I think that he hit 300 in 2011. He traded some of that average for power last year. I just think he's such a talented hitter. I think he's definitely proven that he can stay healthy coming back from that his knee issues of years past. He's received around 600 plate appearances the last two seasons, 598 in 2011 and 619 last year. I think maybe you dock him a couple given his advanced age, but I think there's power in the bat. I think there's some average upside. I think he just gives you a little bit of everything, and I really like that Cardinals lineup, and I think they're going to give him a very good opportunity to pile up some counting stats.
But do you think he could be a playing time risk if Oscar Tavares gets promoted, or do you think that Tavares would just take Jay's spot?
I think Tavares, I don't think we're going to see him until the summertime, and if we do, I think he would play during Beltran's off days, but I don't think it would really cut into Beltran's playing time. I think it would be more along the lines of cutting into Jay's, as you'd mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, another guy that struggled in the second half was Hunter Pence. After he got traded to the Giants, you know, he had a pretty poor second half. He's obviously still with the Giants. Does your lowest ranking mean that you see that situation in that stadium suppressing his numbers again?
I do think the stadium's going to suppress his numbers. I don't think he was as bad as he showed himself to be during his time with the Giants, but I went to Stat Corner just to see exactly what the ballpark indexes were for home runs to right-handed batters, and Stat Corner uses a rolling three-year average. AT&T clocked in at 69, 100 being a neutral park, so it reduced home runs to right-handed batters 31%. And it increased them at Minute Maid about 9% over the last 3 years. That's a 40% drop in ballpark, and I think that's going to hurt his power numbers. My biggest concern with Pence is that I think some people are expecting a rebound of stolen bases, and I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. He's never been an efficient base stealer, and basically he was just no longer allowed to run. For his career, he has 67 stolen bases against 39 caught stealing. That's an ugly, ugly rate. I think if you get 5 to 6 from him, you should be happy. I don't think he's going to hit double digits again in that category. The counting stats could be good. I don't think he's done. I think he's a low-end number 3, high-end number 4 starting outfielder.
Yeah, you know, I might have him a little high, you know, thinking about it, but I just don't see much separation, at least after about number 20 in the outfielder rankings. So I probably have him, you know, even though it's a 14-spot difference, I think, between him and Beltran, I probably have them pretty close profile-wise. I think Pence can go back to hitting around 280 with 20-plus homers. I don't think he's going to get a lot of steals, you know, and I think that's about what you're looking at that point of the draft for outfielders in that 25 to 35 range. Speaking of which, there's another guy right in that range that I put in that range that I don't think a lot of people do, and you especially didn't. Nick Markakis, I think, can give you about the same skill set that Pence does. A little bit higher average, maybe a little bit less on the homer scale. I have him at number 29 under that logic of putting him in that tier. That's a little higher than a lot of people do. I think Fantasy Pros put him around 37, 38, somewhere around there. But you have him at number 60. So why?
I have some ranking remorse there. Combing back over the numbers, I don't love Markakis's skill set, and I think I docked him too far. If I were to re-rank him now, I still would have him only in the upper 40s. I just my biggest concern with Markakis is the fact that he's not going to steal bases either. He stole one last year, and it wasn't just him, it was the Orioles as a whole. As a team, they attempted less than 90 stolen bases. I think his home run power is capped in the 18 to 20 range, with 20 being almost a best case scenario. He hasn't reached that mark since 2008. He was pacing for roughly 18 to 19 home runs if he'd received around 700 plate appearances, which is what he's got in 2011 and 2010. And I think expecting 700 plate appearances is a little bit too much, but 650 plus is I think fair. Once you put him in the 16 to 18 home run range, he's got strong on base skills, so he'll continue to see time in a run producing friendly spot in the Orioles lineup. So he should produce 70 plus runs, 70 plus RBIs. And he can probably hit around his career average of 295, but I just don't think that's quite enough to rank that high. I think I would dock him down a couple tiers than where you have him.
His I think he was a disappointment in fantasy for a few years, and people kind of you forgot about him. They stopped expecting so much, but the total numbers he put up last year is what he's been doing those last few years. And like you said, it was in a lot less plate appearances. Now that he's healthy, if he can continue, that rebound year that he had last year, I think he could have a 2008 type season without the steals. Like you said, Baltimore doesn't run as much anymore, but I think he could maybe have 20 homers, in that 18 to 20 range. He can get to a 300 average if he stays healthy. I think that's in the realm of possibility. And when you're looking at where he's ranked in that 37 outfielder range, I think that's around pick 100 overall. I take that stat line at that point, even if it's not going to give me that many stolen bases. So for another guy that we disagree on, we're the opposite way. You have Josh Reddick at number 30. Well, I have him at 47. Well, Fantasy Pros has him around number 50, so they're closer to what I had this time. Defend your ranking of him at 30.
I think that when Reddick was dealt to the A's last year, he didn't come with maybe the accolades of a top prospect, but it didn't mean that he wasn't a top 5 to 10 guy in the Red Sox organization. He's always had power. He's always had a big arm. I mean, big arm doesn't play in fantasy, but he pretty much was what his prospect profile was. I don't think he eclipses 30 home runs again, but he does have a high fly ball rate, which should allow him to hit 25 plus again this year. He's going to hit in a friendly spot in the A's lineup where he should pile up runs and RBIs again. The stolen bases came a little bit out of nowhere, but he was efficient doing it. He stole 11 bases in 12 attempts. I think 6 to 8 stolen bases is not out of the question. And his average was a pretty ugly 242 last year, but he also had a 269 BABIP, which is 8 points below his career average, his career BABIP, I should say. I do think that there is some upside there. Granted, his BABIP's going to be lower than your average player because he hits so many fly balls. Fly balls that stay in the yard have a higher tendency to result in outs than your ground balls and your line drives. So I don't think that there's a ton of average upside, but I think 25 home runs or more, probably another 160 plus runs and RBIs combined, 6 to 8 stolen bases, and an average of 250 to 260, probably closer to the 250 to 255 range, I think is very much within reach for him.
I don't think, obviously he doesn't have a lot of average upside, and I think that's kind of why I'm down on him. Got good power guys that hit 250, I don't think are too hard to find in fantasy. I wouldn't reach for them up in that 30 range. I see that average as a real downer without exceptional power, like Adam Dunn type power. I don't think you can carry that 250 average and be a productive player in a starting lineup in your standard mixed league three outfielder kind of thing. And I just wouldn't put that in my lineup and try to work around it. I think you could do better, sacrifice five homers or so and get a better average, especially if we're talking about a guy like Markakis who could hit close to 300 and give you, maybe 10 homers less. I'd still rather deal with that than a 250 average. He could certainly take a step forward. That contact rate has been falling the last few years, though. It seems to me like he's trying to hit more homers. in that stadium that he plays in at home, where it's cavernous. You know, there's a lot of foul territory. I don't think that's a good profile for a hitter in that type of environment. So I'm not looking at him progressing, really. I think he is what he is, and I think the counting stats come back a little bit. And for that, I wouldn't start him in standard mixed leagues. Okay, so let's move on to sleepers at the position. We match up on one sleeper, Aaron Hicks. You go ahead and tell me why you like Aaron Hicks first.
He's always been lauded for the tools, and last year he finally started to put those tools into play. The Twins traded both of their center fielders from last season's roster, Ben Revere and Denard Spahn. They'll probably open the season with someone like Joe Benson in the outfield or Darren Mastrioni. But I think Hicks eventually forces his way up there. He played all last season in Double-A, so he's not far from reaching the bigs. He has the type of defensive profile that will allow him to stay in the lineup and kind of work through some of the growing pains. But he's speedy. He's got a chance to steal 25, 30 bases when he gets acclimated to the big league level. But he's not one of these speedsters that's just a slap hitter. He has some decent raw power. He hit 13 home runs at the Double-A level last year. I think he brings a little bit of everything to the table, and I think that he's going to have an easier chance to get to the big leagues and settle in than some of the other more notable prospects. Not to say that he's not one himself, but he's probably not going to get the headlines of a Taveras or a Myers or these other guys, and he shouldn't, in the sense that they are better offensive prospects, but he's got a fairly clear path to playing time, and that makes a huge difference in larger leagues.
Yeah, he was formerly a top prospect. You know, maybe a few years ago, we were talking about him like we talk about a guy like Taveras now. Obviously, he wasn't that high up, but he still had pretty high accolades. Been a little bit forgot about as the next wave of talent comes in. I think he's in a pretty even position battle between him, Mastroianni, and Benson. I think Benson probably can be forgotten about in that battle. I think he needs a little more work. But if it's down between him and Mastroianni, I like him better. He does a lot more offensively. He's a solid defensive player. A 13 homer, 32 steal season at Double-A with hitting .285 is, at the age of 22, that's pretty good. You know, that's nothing to ignore, nothing to write off as a oh, he's a little bit too advanced for that level. You know, 22 years old isn't that old for Double-A. So I don't know. His stat line kind of reminded me of an early career Carl Crawford. He can give you 10 to 15 homers, and then he has that massive steals upside also while contributing a solid average. For that super late in the draft, you know, that's a guy I'm looking for. I just finished a AL-only draft with a few other writers, and I got him, you know, super late as my fifth outfielder in an AL-only league, you know, 18th round or so, and that kind of value, you know. I look for the upside late in the draft, like we always say, and he's a guy that has upside.
The one thing I would caution with Hicks is being on a bad Twins team. I do think that they open him in the minors, even if he just blows the socks off of everyone, just to manipulate that service time. I mean, we see it every year. The Rays used to get knocked forward all the time. But if you're not going to win now, there's definitely a case to be made for preventing these guys from being super twos. But as you said, I think he's got the most talent of that mix, and I think eventually he settles in this year as their everyday center fielder.
Okay, so who else do you have at sleeper outfield?
I also have Nolan Reimold. He was shut down last year very early due to a neck injury. He had that fused. When he's healthy, he brings above average power to the table. He has some strong on base skills. He's a solid player. I mean, he's not flashy. I don't believe in the resurgence of Nate McLouth from last year, so I think there is going to be an opportunity for playing time. The other player that could cut into Reimold's playing time is Wilson Betemit, who is slated to play designated hitter primarily, but I think that you're going to see Reimold get some regular playing time there. I don't think that he's going to get, say, 600-plus plate appearances because he's coming off of a serious surgery to fuse his neck. But I think that 500 plus and around 20 to 25 home runs with an average around his career mark of 261 isn't out of the question. I like the talent there, and he's the type of player that I would throw a dart at the dartboard late with. He's not going to come at an expensive cost, so why not take that chance late?
Yeah, if the Orioles decide to give him, regular playing time, it'd be interesting to see what he could do. It's worth a shot in deeper leagues. I don't know that he's going to get that shot. It seems to me like they might platoon that left field position. And if it's a straight platoon, then Reimold's in trouble as far as playing time goes as a righty who's going to play mainly against lefties. So if they decide to play McLouth a lot against righties, then I don't see Reimold playing that much. He would need an injury to kind of open up time. But like I said, I would like to see what he could do with regular playing time. It seems he hasn't gotten a fair shake after his quality debut back in 09, I think it was. Okay, so for my second sleeper, I'm going to take a 22-year-old guy. He has 118 stolen bases over the last 2 years. His name is Anthony Gose. He plays for the Blue Jays. He's blocked at the major league level after all the additions that the Blue Jays had. They have Colby Rasmus starting in center. They have Melky now starting in left. When Gose did get a look last year, he made poor contact. So that's something he has to work on. But he has tremendous speed. He could steal 50 bags if he's given a regular job. Colby Rasmus isn't really established as far offensively. It looks like he's at a turning point of his career. He's at a fork in the road. Is he going to turn into just another big prospect that flames out early, or is he going to develop into a regular player? We don't know yet. I think Toronto's in a position now where they can't afford to go through growing pains with all the headlines they made this offseason. So if they need to make a change, I think Gose fits in at the top of that lineup as a speedster that could give them stolen bases as long as he can develop his contact a little bit better. If he does start making more contact, even if it's not great contact, with his speed, his average is going to start to come up. So as long as he's not striking out as much as he had in the past, I think he could eventually be the leadoff guy, shift Reyes down to number two. So I'm definitely keeping an eye on him in the minors to see how he's doing, and also keeping an eye on Rasmus to see if a change could potentially be made.
The tools are certainly there. I definitely agree in terms of him being a potential stolen base monster. And he's made advances as a player. I mean, he went from being a very inefficient base stealer that just ran and ran and ran to get his stolen bases to really cleaning that up. And from what I've read, it really sounds like he's a hardworking type of prospect. And you hope that he can make that type of advancement as a hitter. Just some guys can, some guys can't, but the fact that he's been able to make that type of advance in another phase of his game is promising, I think. I agree that Rasmus has had his struggles, and I don't think he's going to have the longest leash. The one guy that I would be concerned with muddying things up a little bit is another player that came over with Jose Reyes, Emilio Bonifacio. It sounds like they're going to use him in a super utility role with Masiar Torres playing second base, but that could change. I mean, he could strictly win the job, Bonifacio, that is, could strictly win the job in spring training, and then he would no longer be really in the mix for that center field job. But there are enough moving pieces that I think they'll award Gose the time that he needs to develop. But if he comes out hot next year, Rasmus stinks up the joint, it's not out of the question that the Blue Jays, with as you said, making all these win now moves, wouldn't pull the plug on Rasmus and give Gose a look again.
Okay, so let's move on to busts at the outfield position. We have two each. Your first one is going to be Josh Hamilton. Tell me why you're not a believer in Hamilton.
I'm not a believer in him where people are taking him. It's not even so much that I dislike Josh Hamilton, but if you want to talk about a guy that carries a ton of risk, I mean, he carries that risk. He's missed time in the past. He has a much publicized history of drug use that kept him from playing baseball for a number of years. And to be honest, we don't know how the body's going to hold up after abusing it for years. Not only that, but from strictly a numbers and standpoint, he's moving to a much less hitter-friendly ballpark. I mean, going from Texas to Los Angeles is not going to do his home run totals any favors. He's become a very free swinger. He chases a lot. He's a very streaky player. I like the lineup. If he stays healthy, he should pile up counting stats. But I mean, there are enough questions that I think there is that bust potential there where he just really struggles. And I mean, we also saw the pressure of that big contract play its role with Pujols last year, and I wouldn't be shocked to see Hamilton scuffle out of the gate either if he presses to justify that big deal.
Yeah, his range of expected outcomes might be bigger than anyone else in the league. He could win the MVP easily. He could miss miss significant time with injury, you know, any number of injuries. He could miss significant time without injury if, you know, some drug problem resurfaces or something else resurfaces. You know, moving from Texas to Los Angeles isn't the best move for a guy that's, you know, recovering or maybe he's already recovered. You know, hopefully that's all behind him, but Los Angeles isn't the best, you know, environment for that kind of thing. So, yeah, he's probably a little too volatile for me to take in the top 15. So I'm with you with his ranking right now. I probably wouldn't rely on him as my number one outfielder. So I'll probably take Flack for my first bust, but it's a guy everybody loves. Everybody thinks can challenge for the home run title year in and year out. It's Giancarlo Stanton of the Marlins. I'm not sure I'd invest a top 15 pick in Stanton either. While he outslugged the league last year, he seems primed that he could lead everyone in homers, not even just in the National League, but in the whole majors. I don't see why pitchers are going to give him anything to hit this year in that lineup, because there's nobody really to protect him. Is it going to be Morrison or Rob Brantley, you know, that's going to protect him in the lineup? Is Polanco hitting in front of Stanton? Is that are all Stanton's homers going to be solo homers? Remember that year where Sosa, it seemed like he was on a 40-homer pace and he had like 70 RBIs, you know, for a lot of the year? That just seems like that kind of season. I think you're really limiting yourself if you take Stanton that high up. Even if he does get the homers, he might shake out to basically be a one-category guy with just average numbers in runs and in RBI. Doesn't going to do anything for you in stolen bases. He's not a huge average hitter. So you're basically hoping for that 50 homers. And if that doesn't come, what do you have left? So for my number one outfielder for a top 15 pick, that's not something I'm looking for early in the draft.
I'm not as concerned with him seeing pitches, but I do agree with the sentiment that he's going to have trouble putting up huge run and RBI totals with what he has around him. I mean, good hitters are going to get theirs. I do think that he's going to hit, you know, his 40-plus bombs. I don't think he's going to be just a complete abomination in runs scored or RBIs, but I think it does hurt having a poor lineup around him. And my biggest concern with Giancarlo is that batting average. He's not a .290 hitter. He struck out in 28.5% of his plate appearances last year, and he doesn't make a lot of contact. I mean, he is is a batting average risk. I think his career .270 average is probably more of a in line with what he could do with some risk. To do worse than that and some upside to do a little bit better than that. But a 290 right now is an outlier unless he is able to improve that contact rate substantially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for the second bust, your second bust, I know who it is, and I want to hear what you have to say because I actually like this player a lot this year. So who's your second bust?
B.J. Upton, and he's another player with a very volatile range of outcomes. He has the natural talent to just explode and put together a career year where he goes something like 30-30 or 30-50. He's done a little bit of everything at some point in time in his career. My biggest concern is to his stolen base total. He goes from Joe Maddon, who is notorious for sending base runners, to Freddie Gonzalez, who is not notorious for sending base runners like Joe Maddon. And I do think that that's going to hurt his stolen base total. I think he's probably going to be closer to 25-30 as opposed to 30-40+. I do like the power. I think he's a 2020 guy. I think it's going to come with a poor average, probably around his career mark of .255. The counting stats should be there, but I don't know what that lineup's going to look like, so it's a little bit difficult to project that right now. I have heard that they may hit Andrelton Simmons at the top of the lineup. I really want to see what that lineup looks like, how they're going to slot their new arrivals before investing a ton in BJ.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's escaping a bad offensive park and moving to a better offensive park for his game. He was almost a 30-30 player last year, even if he doesn't quite get those steals. I think he can maintain the homers. I think that average could come up a little bit now that he's not playing in Tampa. He struggled with a back injury last year, early in the year, and that's and even you know aside from that, he still almost managed to get 30-30. He was absolutely a monster in September, and he was great overall in the second half. I think he had 20 homers in the second half. He's only it seems he's been around forever, and he probably has been around forever, but he's only 28 years old. It's not like he's on the downside of his career. He still could be right in the middle of that peak, so I could see him developing his game a little bit further in Atlanta. I'm not gonna wax poetic about playing with your brother, and it's gonna automatically like inject life into his game. Who knows if that's gonna happen or not, but I could still see a breakout more than a bust getting out of Tampa. So my second bust is going to be a little redundant now. You know, we prepared these a week in advance, and then Curtis Granderson goes and suffers an injury, and he's out 10 weeks or so. But I'm just going to talk about a little bit why I didn't like him anyway. Let's say he's completely healthy and wipe that injury from our minds. The 43 homers were nice, but his already poor average tanked even further last year. He hit 239, and along with that, he stole just 10 bases. At the rate he's going, he's developing into Adam Dunn's statistical profile than he is, you know, a power speed average guy. If the homers come down even a little bit from that low 40s range, even just to 30, 35, he's a massive bust in the top 20, you know, and that's even with a healthy season. Now, obviously, people aren't going to draft him as high. He's going to fall out of the ECR rankings, out of the top 20 with when we factor in that injury. What do you think about Granderson?
My biggest complaint with Granderson has been a long-running complaint. He can't hit left-handed pitching. In his career, he has over 1,300 plate appearances against southpaws. He's hitting a paltry 225 against them. That's not going to get it done. Last year, against right-handed pitching, he was not exactly a ton better in terms of batting average. He hit 239 against them. He is definitely an injury risk. I apologize. He is a batting average risk. And as you said, he really needs that power, which Yankee Stadium will help inflate that. But even a slight slip hurts because the stolen bases are – he's not a 20 stolen base guy these days. So you really, really need that power. You really need those big counting stats. I was not going to invest in him before the injury. I think people are going to possibly reach now on him in terms of – oh, he's injured. Let's get a discount on him. We can get, you know, a guy that was ranked inside the top 20 at the position before injury at a discount. Well, I didn't like him at that spot before the injury. I don't think you're getting a great player if you stash him at a discount now, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately stuck with him. I play in a dynasty points league, and he's my number one guy. And you know, I tried to offload him for the last offseason last year, couldn't do it. Now I'm stuck with an injured player. So luckily in that league, it's only three outfielders. You can work around it. But yeah, I think he's on the downside of his career, and he needs massive power to be playable moving forward. And I just, you know, I don't see that consistently coming anymore.
Fantasy baseball cafe.com.